You're listening to the Ask Drone You podcast. You ask, we answer your drone questions. Whether you're here to turn your passion into profit or you simply fly for fun, we're a community of learners and teachers who aspire to achieve greatness. We are
Drone You.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another awesome episode of Ask Drone You. With me today is a panel of superstars. I would call them super pilots, except for Peter. That being said, we have a great group of people here to help us provide insight on the state of the industry. When DJI is about to launch a couple of new drones that have already been leaked in the wake of the coronavirus, well, who will be buying them? To find out more about which industry verticals are really being affected by the coronavirus and how this may affect, well, things like remote ID, we have an all-star cast. So joining me today, I'm really excited about this, is Mr. Vic Moss. He is the Director of Policy at DroneU.
Thanks for having me, Paul.
Thank you, Vic. Thank you. Also joining us today, we have Mr. Kenji Sugihara, who's an aerial cinematographer based out of Oregon, working in film. Welcome, my friend.
Thanks, Paul. It's always good to be on and good to see you. See everybody healthy and happy. So good.
It's good to see you, too. I'm glad that we have that nice, beautiful background, and we might avoid seeing some kiddos dancing in the background this time, which was a lot of fun. So
you might see some pigeons. You never know.
You might. Joining us today, too, is Mr. Peter Dis, who is an engineer at Easy Aerial, really focusing on industrial applications. Welcome, my friend.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for having me. I really do appreciate the time.
You look really excited to be here, Peter, and I'm grateful that you're here, and thanks for taking my crap, as always, because everyone who knows you are dishing it out everywhere else. So, but you know what? We're grateful for you, Peter, because you have a very, very technical mind. You know how these systems work, and I think you provide a lot of insight. So thanks for being here.
Anytime, Paul. Thank you.
And also joining me today, he is a good friend. He's also a burly, bearded guy, and you might have seen a picture with me and him that looks a lot like stepbrothers. I'm talking about Mr. Joshua Baker, who is a drone service provider and mapper from Houston, Texas. Welcome, my friend.
Hey, how's it going, everybody? It's nice to see everybody here, and I've definitely gotten shaggy since the start of this, so...
Well, thanks for being here. Thanks for being here. And lastly, joining us is someone who's new to the show, Mr. Tom Powers from Sky High, Boise, Idaho. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Paul. Very excited to be here. Love what you guys are doing.
Well, thank you very much, Tom. And also, very last, but definitely not least, raising his digital hand in the feed, as always, the Flying Dutchman.
Hey, Paul. How are you, man? Thanks for having me on the show.
No, thank you, guys. Thank you. I think this is going to be a lot of fun as all of us, well, collectively, are going to provide these different perspectives to really understand, you know, which verticals are taking off, which verticals, well, are faltering, where are people getting work, where are people not getting work? There's so many questions, and I wanted to bring all of you here. Because when the economy was growing, it was very easy for new companies to really explore evolving technologies. And it really allowed a lot of drone service providers the opportunity to educate clients and potentially get new jobs. And as we know, emerging technologies offer a lot of value, especially in an economy that's growing. But now that we're 6 weeks into the coronavirus and the economy is essentially shut down, well, it makes you wonder when in some states drone pilots are deemed as essential and in some they're not. Well, it's a roller coaster ride for drone pilots, making each industry vertical unique. So in this panel today, we're going to be asking each person, where do they see the market? We're going to be asking them questions and trying to give you different perspectives from different parts of the world. So for our first question today, where do you see the state of the drone market and where do you see it going? To provide us with the most intellectual response first and dumbing it down from there, joining us, Mr. Kenji Sugihara. Thank you again, sir.
Oh man, you've put me on the spot right off the bat, huh? Mimi.
Well, you know, I like to have fun with this, and I like to have fun in general. But Kenji, you know, you're in the film industry. A lot of people who don't know you, you've worked in Ford commercials. You've done a lot of really cool stuff. In fact, even flying lights over moving subjects and filming them on set. So where do you see the current state of the market, and where is it going?
So just to give you some background, originally I did put out a survey out on the commercial sort of UAS group on Facebook, and I said, hey, are people starting to lose some of their jobs that they're having? Initially, a lot of people are like, oh no, things are still planned. Things are still going on. And then probably around early March or so, everything just shut down in sort of the commercial production and movie side of things, to the point where we had large shoots planned, and they just suddenly disappeared. They went poof. And ever since then, haven't heard a peep, although we start to hear, we've actually started to get some calls. Can we do this small shoot if you're just out there doing like a VFX plate shot, or if we do a small crew, is it possible using social distancing? So it looks like there is going to be a slow return back to what we saw, but I don't think that's going to happen very quickly. I'm also working with the film office in Oregon, at least, to try to figure out ways that we can tell people to that Oregon is open for business, and how to do their operations in Oregon safely, and whether it can be done at all. So at least from our perspective, it's going to be starting at small sort of operations and then gradually moving up in scale until you get the large productions back. But as of now, nothing's going on. We're just hearing word that people want to get out there and actually do some business. So that's a good sign. But I think we're going to be seeing not to where we were for quite a long time.
Yeah, I don't think we can expect to see a V-shaped recovery either. And I think what really sucks is that drone pilots, depending on the vertical that they're working in, they're either going to be kind of waiting for the industry to say, okay, we're ready. Or if they're in certain, you know, independent verticals, they're probably going to be right back in the mix, you know, really fast. Which brings me to our next speaker. Vic, you know, I know you are bouncing back and forth, job to job. I know that because I sent you one. But what are you seeing in the industry? I know you're in Denver. You're in one of the kind of the hot zones, as they would call it. What are you seeing?
What I'm seeing locally is that a lot of people are losing work. I've lost a little bit, but I've also gained some. So it's interesting in that aspect of it. I've got the batteries on the charger. We've got a shoot tomorrow morning. And also we have a shoot Monday. The shoot Monday is a COVID specific shoot. So it's going to be kind of interesting. Can't share too much just yet, but,
just don't share the virus.
Oh no, definitely not. we've definitely lost. I've lost a gig, through Institute of Physics, and, they just totally shut everything down. A lot of my clients are in construction, so they're kind of holding stuff off, but there's enough work out there for me to keep me above water, I think would be a good way to put it.
Gotcha. Well, that's good to hear, Vic. I'm glad that things are at least kind of maintaining for you, it sounds
mm-hmm.
like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, well, that's good. Well, one more perspective. As someone who has been getting a lot of inspection jobs, Tom, you know, what are you seeing? What's going on? How is it affecting you?
Yeah, so basically kind of where I'm at is I live in kind of the insurance world. Most of my stuff's inspections. So we've seen a huge uptick in inspections with all the social distancing orders that have been put into place around, you know, all the various states of the country. The videography side and the, you know, photography side, that has really, you know, kind of taken a big hit for us. But the inspection side is definitely booming and definitely making up for it. So it's been good.
That's good, dude. I'm glad to hear with the little kids in the background that you're still able to feed that family. Well, our next guest is in a very unique actual vertical, as I think about it. And he, like me, is in kind of the drone mapping world. And the thing is that he and I were having a phone call literally just 30 minutes ago, and he goes, hey man, have you been seeing what's going on with Matterport? And I was like, oh, Josh, you haven't heard the show in a week, have you, my friend? So anyway, Josh from Houston, in the mapping world, what are you seeing?
So yeah, I've definitely been busy with the kids, taking care of homeschool and work. It's definitely been an interesting role that we've learned how to take on. But I've also seen a lot of retail companies wanting to even do Matterport just to have a virtual store. There's a lot of smaller companies that they didn't plan for this. And so now they need to get a product out there and they need to get it quick. And so Matterport's one of those ways to just have a great, great way to put it out there and also have links to your store, to your product. So it's easy to get the cash flow going for that. So it's, and then I've also seen a lot of, push for augmented reality or virtual reality kind of stuff because you have to experience it. And so,
yeah, you know, it was interesting after talking with you on the phone, I went to go speak with Rob and I said, you know, Josh just told me a hardware store is using VR to create models. And I was like, that's brilliant because you have like the older people who know where things are. They know what they're looking for. They may not know the name, but what you're doing is you're allowing them to experience the store in a whole new way, which I think is really cool. But that brings us to the second part of the question, which Haya, I'm wondering here, with everything that you just heard on this panel, the current state of the industry, it makes me wonder, what does the future really look like for the industry this year, as well as the years to come?
Yeah, good question. I think you can distinguish two areas in the market. For one, the consumer market, which I think is being hit hard. I mean, it's hard to imagine that people have buying drones on top of their shopping list with the coronavirus outbreak. So that worries me. I think also a lot of consumers that actually who do want to buy drones, they're waiting for their drones. I mean, Autel has had delays in being able to ship drones to consumers. I think only this week, people have started to receive their Evo 2. Skydio has stopped their production temporarily as a result of the virus. And of course, we're waiting for DJI to launch their new product. So I think a lot of consumers are waiting and kind of waiting and seeing what's going to come to the market and when drones are available. On the flip side, if you look at the first responders and local law enforcement, I think that market is actually getting stronger because people are seeing how drones can be used to fight the coronavirus. And I think there's going to be a big uptick in that market probably for the years to come.
Interesting, interesting. Well, thank you for chiming in. Our next speaker who is going to be joining us is Peter. So a lot of people who may not be familiar with you, Peter, but you were with DJI for a very long time, and you are now with Easy Aerial, kind of taking the drone game to all new heights. So where do you see the state of the industry in the future?
So I'm more of a gloomy guy on this panel, I guess, because Easy Aerial, we're full members of every AMA field within the five boroughs, and no one's there. No one's flying on an AMA field at all. The only people on the field are the company I work for, Easy Aerial, and we're testing all our products there. I see it, especially with this remote ID question going to be coming down the pike, it's going to be pushing out the consumer end out. You know, Canada's drone laws are avidly, they don't want this as a hobby. Now with the US, how it's going, I think they want it the same way. And AMA's So good and bad. My business is going great because the military really wants American made products. But like Drone DJ says, you know, the DJI is releasing all these great products, and I don't think anyone's going to be able to buy them.
I couldn't agree. The Flying Dutchman, aka Drone XL, would probably agree with you as well. But I appreciate that, Peter. Just let me just make sure I'm hearing you right. Just to recap what you're saying. You're saying commercial market down, industrial military up, and then hobby down.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying. Okay. All right. Well, I want to hear the counterpoint from Kenji. The future, what does it look like? We just heard from Peter, who's now muted, thank you. And I'm wondering, do you agree with him? Does the future look the same in your eyes?
It's a tough call. I mean, like I mentioned before, it's going to be a long slog back. Some industries are going to do well. And I think this is a good opportunity, as Peter says, to potentially help bolster some of the domestic development. That's not a bad thing. It's especially given some of the concerns that have been raised, it's an opportunity for people to actually come up with good products. Unfortunately, right now, the value isn't there because DJI has just knocked it out of the park and they've created such a fantastic product at a price point. So the challenge is there, and whether it's going to be up to us, whether we grasp it and can run with it. So we'll see that. Another thing that Peter just talked about was the regulatory side. There are things still happening. For example, on the standard side, we just had one of our meetings for ASTM, and we're working on things such as the sort of roadmap for the UTM ConOps 2.0. So that's one of the things that we're working on and providing feedback for. That's also happened at the DAC level too. So there's a ConOps out there for the UTM, which is 2.0, and there's a task group associated with that. And we're having sort of weekly meetings providing feedback back to the DAC, and we're creating a report which really addresses some of the issues that will be upcoming in terms of implementation of a UTM. And for those out there who don't know what UTM is, it's the unmanned traffic management system that will be in place to sort of manage traffic to drones, whether that be sort of commercial drones doing deliveries to other sort of commercial activities. There is a debate on whether the run-of-the-mill 107, what we do, will be included, or whether it's going to be even necessary if it's not flying beyond visual line of sight or not engaged in some sort of more complicated type of operation. But on the regulatory side, things are still ongoing. It's a little bit slower probably because of COVID. People aren't going into work. The FAA's being delayed a little bit. But again, it's a process that it's just going to take time for things to get back to sort of a normal.
Yeah, definitely going to take some time to get back to normal. But you bring up a great point, Kenji, and you bring up a point about remote ID and the fact that, you know, the FAA, a lot of their employees are working at home just like us. And I just, you know, I really question, does remote ID really even happen anymore? Does it get perpetually delayed because of the coronavirus? And then here's my next point. You know, we were battling with these anti-drone bills, these anti-China bills, and it rumored also as an executive order. And after getting my little paws on the executive order and reading that even if you had a Chinese SIM card on your drone, you could not fly it in the United States, which that means you too, Peter, because you got Chinese motors. So he's like, no. He's like, Castle Creations. So that being said, I really wonder, does the virus slow down the industry killing regulations? And then if, you know, here's the other side of it too. If the coronavirus stops sales of drones, right? We already saw pretty much the entire DJI sales team is gonzo. So at least in the United States. So if we have decreased sales, and you have FAA officials who are spending more time answering quizzes on Facebook than reading through the comments on the NPRM, it really makes you wonder what is the state of the industry? Is there a state of the industry? Vic, you want to chime in here, buddy?
I think it's interesting right now to see exactly what's going on in Washington, whether it's with the NPRM, with remote ID, or the bills, or any of that stuff. Obviously, with Congress in recess right now, the bills that we've all worried about for the last few weeks and few months are not going anywhere soon. As far as the NPRM, I think a lot of whether or not that's affected is going to be based on if the contractors at the FAA is hired to read and compile all those 213 comments, what are they doing? Have they been furloughed? Have they been, hey, just work from home? You know, what is the security issues involved with stuff like that? I think if they've answered all those questions to the point where they can easily do all this stuff, then I think remote ID will move along. But I think it'd be a fool's, I just think it's slowing down a little bit and will definitely be delayed a little bit. Will it be delayed a lot? I don't think so, because it's too important. You can't have the over people ops. You can't have the night ops added to the 107 initial or the UGR until remote ID comes down the pipeline. So I think it's a priority. Is it a great priority due to COVID? No, I don't think so. So it'll probably slow down a little bit.
Yeah, I think the UAS in general is probably not a priority for the FAA, and I think that that is clear as glass. But Vic, this brings up a follow-up question for you. Is the delay a good thing or a bad thing, as the FAA could take the time to really, you know, scour through those comments and internalize them and maybe listen to practical drone pilots? So is it a good thing or is it a bad thing?
I think anytime the FAA has the ability to take a little more time to read comments, especially with the overwhelming numbers they got on the latest NPRM, is a good thing. Gosh, it depends on whether or not they read the comments for the people who sat down and thought about comments, or they read the comments about the copy and paste people. Depends on which way they go with that as to whether or not it'll really slow down and it'll really kind of craft what will be the final rule in our favor.
Yes. Well, Vic, I hear you on what you're saying with remote ID. I really hope that those other things really don't actually rely on remote ID. I know that they are said that they're being relied on, meaning, you know, to get them out. But, you know, I really wonder how much truth there is to that.
I'm sorry. Let me put it this way. The initial the NPRM that I talked about earlier that came out, I think it was February of last year. It says in the NPRM that remote ID has to be up and running before either of those two things take place. So if it's not tied to the NPRM, they're going to have to redo the NPRM process, or not tied to RID. I think they're going to have to redo the NPRM process because the language will be so different.
Wow. Yeah, no, that could be really interesting. I could also see the government doing something like, we have implemented remote ID. Look, remote ID. See, there's a number on the drone. It's remote. All right, hold on one second. We're getting to someone who is avidly wanting to take this topic on full bore.
Getting back to the original sort of what Vic was talking about in terms of the NPRM. In the NPRM, there is a mention of an industry standard. And during our last sort of discussion that we had, we had a pretty in-depth discussion about what we wanted to do in terms of the standard itself, because there are some disagreements between what ASTM created for the ASTM remote ID standard and what came out in the NPRM. So we decided to actually stand pat and not do any sort of work on it, except for like minor issues, which could end up leading to a little bit even more of a delay, because what's going to happen is the FAA finalizes that NPRM, and then we're going to have to adjust the standard, the remote ID standard, to sort of mesh with what the FAA has come out with. So that might lead to a little bit of an implementation delay from our side too.
Interesting. Well, here to provide another opportunity to comment on that is Peter. Peter, just based off of the looks on your face, it looks like you may not be in agreement.
So a lot of you guys know, I am a hobbyist who happens to be an engineer who happens to fly drones for a living. And to be bluntly honest, that this is benefiting right now is, yes, everyone's worried about the COVID-19, and that's more important, directing air travel. So all their concerns are there. Now, as an individual in industry, they are pushing for remote ID like no tomorrow. This will give companies like Easy Aerial, Percepto, a bunch of industrial companies, the ability to fly 5, 10, 15 drones at once. And remote ID is pivotal for that application. Now, where does it affect the everyday consumer? It's going to snuff us out one way or another. It's already bad enough in certain cities like New York City, where we can't have access to Lance and other systems to operate. Our waiver systems are through the roof in waiting for operating within the city. Now, yes, I'm in a more regulatory-based city than most others, but the way the FAA and everyone wants to take this is going to, I don't know how to clearly state it. We're FUBAR'd.
We're FUBAR?
Wow. FUBAR'd. That's proper. That's not a curse. That's okay, right?
Yeah. Well, for someone who doesn't know what that means, I'm now going over to Vic, as he had quite the reaction to that. FUBAR'd. For us you know, baby children millennials over here. What does that mean, Vic?
Let's see. The cleaned up version would be fouled up beyond all recognition. It's a military term. It's been around for a very long time. But I'm going to disagree with Peter here a little bit about how it's going to mess up the commercial side, remote ID. So
I'm glad, because I literally got Peter on this call because I knew you two were going to disagree, and I want both sides to be heard. So let's go for it.
I see it as in the commercial side. Now, the hobby side, I think, is getting hosed pretty good.
No.
If it goes through as written. I just don't see that happening, though, because it will just totally hose the hobbyist. The commercial side, I see it as opening up some airspace for us, because we'll be able to fly in certain areas that we couldn't before, because they can pull up their little system that says, okay, somebody's flying over here. Oh, it's Vic. It's okay. Let's take the Mile High Stadium example. If we would have had remote ID at that time, and they have Aeroscope at the stadium, let's say there were two or three people flying, I had permission to fly and I was whitelisted, then they don't have to worry about me. But let's say Bob or Linda or whoever wanted to put their little drone up to get some photos too, and they're not allowed, then they would be, the resources could be used to go after them and have them land rather than just whoever. So I see remote ID as opening up the airspace to a lot of commercial people that are not really there, that are very restricted right now, whether it's during TFR in Washington, D.C., over a group of people, whatever that is. I see it as a positive rather than a negative. But that's just me.
Gotcha. Interesting points here, Vic. Yes, Peter, I will get to you just here in a second, because there was something you said, it would make the airspace more accessible for commercial pilots. I'm having a hard time understanding that, but the more important point that I wanted to bring up. So you're saying remote ID opens up the airspace for more people because law enforcement would be able to see everyone who's flying. And so if you're a 107 pilot on their Aeroscope, it would come up that you're a 107 pilot. So I hear you, but that system only works with a couple of assumptions at hand.
Okay.
And one of the big assumptions is that everyone is complying.
Let me finish.
So if I have, you know, 35 pilots at the park and only two of them are working inside a remote ID, well then, you know, now you have a whole different can of worms. So taking it from there, Peter, I want to hear what you have to say. I know you have a whole lot to say about this. Let's hear it.
So for me, it's difficult because I'm going to treat this as Peter from Easy Aerial, okay? As an engineer in drones today. The nearest component that would fit on your Mavics for remote ID is $7,000. The average pilot cannot afford that.
Well, I think it also goes to show that how efficient and useful are the solutions from drones if now the price doubles. I mean, is it really an efficiency basis now? You know, the argument for using drones is limits liability, saves costs. Are we saving costs at that point?
No. And then the next thing is, are we going to be allowed to use Chinese-made remote IDs if we're already trying to limit the foreign drone market within the United States? That's not an option either. So right now there's three companies that make remote IDs, not in Asia. Okay. Two are in Israel, one's in the US.
So help me understand this. Do you mean devices that would allow drones to work within remote ID? But if I understand remote ID as proposed, what you're saying would actually not be plausible because none of the drones meet the ANSI standards for serial numbers. There's additional manufacturer standards as far as I understand. So I don't see how a retrofit really is plausible here, Peter.
That's the thing. For companies like DJI, they'll make their own components and move forward. For small industries, for small companies like Easy Aerial, Percepto, Precision Hawk, all these other guys out there who have their own frames, they're not making their own remote IDs. We're going to be buying modules and trying to integrate it within our builds. So yes, American drones are already expensive. People want a $1,200 drone that flies like a Mavic, but made in the US. the average American-made drone is thousands of dollars for industry, okay? Now, how are we going to be able to compete with that? I don't know. Now, remote ID in itself is a great idea. But like you said, what are people going to do with their hangars? You're not going to discontinue all your aircraft. And as much as we love to buy new drones, most of us have a Phantom 4 Pro, have an Inspire sitting there for a reason. An Inspire 1, it's your who cares shot rig. Now you're not going to have that anymore. You're not going to be able to use it to do your obstacle course racing, your close bumper car, drift car videos. You know, they're going to expect us to spend more money out. And this is where small drone companies will die, because they'll either buy it and try to use it, or they're not. And I think they're going to go the latter and not buy it. And people are all praying that everyone doesn't follow the law together. And then how do they put, how many drone 107 pilots are there now? How are they going to arrest us all?
Yeah. All right, Vic. I know you want to chime in here desperately. I saw you waving the flags. What's going on?
Well, I'm going to agree with Peter in part of this.
Whoa! Sorry. Holy cow! Oh, my God!
I am prefacing what I'm saying on, well, you mentioned that the FAA is going to read these comments and realize that there have to be some serious changes to the wording. So the final rule has to do things like allow things like the current DJI system to work, because it's easily done. And people like Peter's company could easily adapt something like that, where you're not going to have all the rigmarole that would come with how it's worded as we read it. So I do agree with Peter that if it comes through as it was worded, it could be a serious issue for everybody. So yeah, in that aspect of it, yeah, somebody dropping $7,000 on a remote ID module is ridiculous. And I'm thinking that, and I'm thinking as well that cooler heads at the legislative level, either DOT or the FAA, will sit back and look at this. One of the things you and I talked about a lot during the remote ID things that we were doing was that you could just tell by reading the whole stupid thing that it was written piecemeal, and it was in, you know, stuff was stuck here and stuff was stuck there and parts disagree with each other. And that was, we know why that was done. We won't get into that. But my comments about opening up the airspace would be predicated on the fact that it comes out as a reasonable system to use with existing parts.
And not a reasonable redheaded stepchild reasonable. So
correct.
Like first child reasonable.
There you go. Even middle child, but still.
Hi, I mean, I know you have a lot of thoughts on this particular subject. What are you thinking?
I think it's twofold. I think on one hand, the fact that we have the coronavirus outbreak happening now kind of puts everything on pause, which is probably a good thing to have the FAA work through over 53,000 comments. It's going to give them more time to digest it. And as you guys pointed out, I think there's a lot of things in the document itself that are unclear. And having this extra time hopefully will help them to figure out what to do going forward. On the other hand, 2 weeks ago, I wrote an article about Zipline. Zipline is ready to deliver medication, testing, and other equipment right here in the United States. And the company's been operating and doing this in Rwanda, in Africa, for the last couple of years. I think they have over 20 or over 30,000 flights with successful deliveries by drone. Those companies are ready to rock and roll here in the United States and make those deliveries, and now they cannot. So that's the flip side. I think the FAA is right now actually working with Zipline to see if there's a way to make this possible sooner. So before we even have a remote ID available, I hope they will succeed. And I think on the other hand, something to consider that has nothing to do with the coronavirus per se is the fact that this year is an election year. So if things change, who knows? Maybe we have a different precedent. Maybe he would have different ideas for the FAA going forward as well. So I think there is a lot of things that are up in the air. And yeah, the coronavirus kind of gives us a reason to pause and also a reason to reconsider how we do things going forward.
The coronavirus could have been the single-handed greatest thing that to ever happen to the drone industry if you think about it. You know, China created a true contactless shutdown by using drone delivery for groceries, medicine, pharmacies, everything that you needed. You did not leave your house, while everywhere else in the world, people are still walking around, they're still contacting, they're still buying Starbucks. And it just makes you wonder if the FAA would have actually taken this a lot more seriously and given us a legitimate means of drone delivery and not some haphazard, chopped up, Amazon figured this out under 135, so we're going to go with it, you know, way of doing it, but a true system for drone delivery begs the question, would more people be alive because of it? I know that's quite the stretch, but Kenji is really asking me to have him chime in here, Haya, but you know, I really think the FAA could have hired a lot of drone pilots and really nailed this thing. But Kenji, it looks like you might have something else to say.
Yeah, absolutely. But before we get to what I was going to say, you're absolutely right. I think the FAA dropped the ball in terms of not taking advantage of the current situation to really enable some of these operations. Because you think about it, with COVID and a lot of the shutdowns, there's areas that are pretty much empty, which means that a lot of concerns about dropping on people's heads or whatever don't exist or very minimal. And it would have been great to have that sort of testing opportunity as a proof of concept to show, hey, it can be done safely. So that's I agree with you 100% on that. Back to your original question about being at a flying field and saying, hey, there's only one or two people complying with the remote ID, yet there's like 30 people out there. I think, and I'm hoping in the NPRM that the FAA takes into consideration some of our suggestions. For example, the volume-based remote ID is just saying, I'm going to be flying here at this time. I mean, what more can anybody ask for? You know, it's like, who are you looking for? Oh, there's a drone. Okay, then great. You're flying there. We know how to contact you. It'd be absolutely perfect for that. It's low cost. And it's not intrusive, because one of my biggest fears and one of my biggest concerns, and you've seen me say it out loud, I don't want persistent and pervasive surveillance of all of our drone flights all of the time, because from conversations that have been reported to me, some three-letter agencies want a dashboard of the sky, even the 10-year-old kid who's flying a tiny little drone. It's like, no. That's not rational, and it doesn't make sense. There's the threat, the requirements do not mesh with what the actual threat is. And if anything, broadcast can be integrated with a UTM system, can be integrated with network, and that's so far the simplest system. And as Vic and Peter also noted, ANSI is a big issue, but there's ways to overcome that by either just allowing regular serial numbers up until a certain point, or you allow ANSI numbers for specific components. So just a component of your airframe or whatever could have an ANSI serial number. Or, for example, the add-on could have a serial number. But there's also different technologies in terms of using Wi-Fi or Bluetooth. And fortunately, that's not going to cost as much as you think. A lot of that, if you're requiring network connectivity from the UAS itself, yeah, that's going to get expensive. But there's different types of remote ID. And I think what needs to be driven home is it needs to be context appropriate. So if you need to work in a more secure area, then you have a higher level remote ID. But if you're in the middle of, say, for example, rural Oregon, who cares? You're not going to be creating a danger to anybody. So I think that there's some common sense that hopefully will come out of the NPRM process.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I really appreciate you saying we don't want persistent surveillance systems. And I could not agree with you more. And it really just, I was really scratching my head. And I finally figured out, I don't think that this is actually about remote ID, just like you said. This is about security. This is about, the dystopian state. And we have to maintain our American rights, our constitutionally given rights. I think that is just so important. And I'm sitting here asking the FAA, you know, you and, you know, Peter Navarro are all about anti-China, anti-China, anti-China. And it's like, okay, there was a security problem. What do you need for the security problem to work? An internet connection, right? A form of communications. So why are we now connecting all of the drones to the internet to allow that to happen? But anyway, I'm going to get off my high horse because Tom wants to chime in here. And Tom, I know you've got a few thoughts on your mind. What's up?
Yeah, so, you know, I agree with most of you guys, and I do think that the NPRM, if it goes in as stated, is definitely going to hurt the industry. I don't think there's any question about that. I think with the COVID-19 stuff going on, I do think it's going to push it back to the back burner. But ultimately, you know, everyone knows the FAA is, you know, safety oriented. So if they want to open up those complex operations in more areas, I think that something's needed. The way it sits now, I don't think that's the right way. And what I see this doing is, you know, raising the barrier of entry back, you know, in the 333 days when you had to have the additional licensing to actually, you know, operate on a commercial level. I'm worried about, you know, automatic fines showing up. Who's going to aggregate that data? Who's going to use it? Who's it going to be sold to? And, you know, kind of what's going to happen with everything that they collect?
Yeah, you bring up so many good questions. And I'm going to go back to the gallery view. Can everyone do that one more time? Can everyone respond to what he was saying one more time? Yeah, we all agree, dude. We all agree. And Haya, before we kick you out of this show so that you don't breach your contracts, I wonder, Haya, I mean, I seriously, seriously wonder, are we going to see market consolidation? And if we are, in which industry verticals are we going to see it?
Tough question. I think a crisis like this is definitely going to make life difficult and for some maybe even impossible. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see some drone companies disappear. At the same time, every crisis also opens up doors and creates new opportunities. So I wouldn't also be surprised if we see new players come to the market. In terms of consolidating, I think that's tough. I don't see many options for companies to consolidate. I'm looking at specifically at drone companies like Autel and Skydio and DJI. So I'm not sure what's going to happen there really. I hope we're going to see more companies being able to get drones in the hands of drone pilots. And that's my biggest worry right now with Autel, Skydio, is that they have great products, but people are not getting them in their hands. So in that sense, it doesn't really do us any good. So I hope they get their stuff sorted out quickly and then we get some real competition going here for the regular drone pilots and even commercial drone pilots for that matter.
Yeah, I agree. You know, if remote ID goes through as proposed, if these Senate bills, congressional bills, or executive order goes in as proposed, I mean, I understand what they're trying to do by forcing the American market to come to fruition. I just don't think that we have the resources, systems, or people in place to actually get a legitimate drone manufacturer who can support the industry at scale and at the price point that DJI has been offering. I mean, look, DJI has laid down the groundwork. They have lowered the prices of everything that you need to build a drone because they've sold so much of it. So I agree with you. There's a great opportunity here for new players to come in. It's just, you know, you wonder how feasible it is. How scalable are these companies truly going to be?
Well, and it's difficult, right? Because right now we're dealing with the corona crisis, basically. So we have a crisis that's happening right here and right now. You could argue that if the NPRM is not adjusted in any smart way, then that's your next crisis down the line. And that's not going to be effective right away, but in a couple of years it would be. So that's going to make it hard for drone companies as well to develop products that are going to be launched, let's say, 2-3 years from now, because it's quite unclear what those drones need to be able to do.
Yeah. Lots of concern. What do you have to say?
So like Haya said, was, you know, new players. And even if you're thinking about new ways of doing stuff and presenting your work, a lot of people are trying to go live right now. And I think that's we all have cameras. We all have a lot of different modes to broadcast, and so I think that's important, especially for a lot of essential organizations right now, that they need to get their word out there. So I think that's an important avenue to look at.
Gotcha. Kenji, moving back to you here, bud, I know that you have a lot to say regarding this.
Sure. So one thing I want to talk about is since we're out of work, there's a lot of people in many industries who are struggling. and especially in the media side, like you mentioned, and work is starting to be affected. Vic, you mentioned that there has been some increase. Some industries are really hurting outside of construction. And one of the things that we've had issues with is obtaining some of the SBA loans. For example, there's the EIDL, which is the one of the loan products that came out. There's the Paycheck
Through the
Protection.
PPP, right?
There's both.
Okay.
And a lot of us, as small businesses, haven't been able to access it, either because we don't bank at the right banks, or there's been issues with paperwork, or there's just such a huge line, and they've run out of funding, which is so problematic for us. For example, just to talk about my own company, my two partners, since we haven't been able to get any funding, they're single guys. Even though their expenses are low, they're starting to run out of money, and they're under the gun. And even UI is very difficult to get. A lot of us are work on 1099s and or as small companies, and not having access to that capital has been so critical. And for myself, at least, I've been getting in contact with our congressional representatives saying, hey, look, we need to make sure that the small businesses like ours get the funding that we need to be able to survive. Just to give you another example, paying for insurance becomes an issue too. I've heard stories from some of my friends who can't even pay for insurance. And once that insurance goes, guess what? They can't fly anymore. And if you can't fly anymore, you can't generate revenue. So there's so many issues going on right now because of the COVID crisis, where we, if there's any congressional folks listening or this gets out to people, we need help. We need help to make sure that we can feed our folks, we can feed our families, and keep our businesses going. Because otherwise, there's not going to be consolidation. There's just going to be simply companies going belly up because we can't afford to stay open.
Yeah, and that actually brings up a point that that Tom just brought up. And Tom, you know, you just brought up a lot of carriers are offering premium rebates and reductions. But this is not in the aviation insurance market, is it?
As far as I know, I haven't seen anything specific to, you know, Global Aerospace or any of the aviation companies offering a premium rebate. I know a lot of auto carriers are, a lot of homeowner carriers are as well. I've seen Progressive, Nationwide, State Farm, USAA, and a handful of others, you know, either offering, you know, rebates in the premium or, you know, 25% reduction for, you know, next month. So depending on where you have, you know, your different liabilities, you know, your general liability, professional liability, it's definitely worth a call to say, hey, can you guys do anything? Can you help me out? I mean, times are tough right now. We're not driving as much. You know, the risk pool is fairly low right now. So, you know, what can you do to help me out? I mean, the worst I can do is say no. But
see, I want to call and make sure that if I get a speeding ticket over three figures, that it won't count right now. Because the risk factor is low, but I mean, that's just me. You know, that being said, it brings up, you know, here at DroneU, the PPP program, one of the things that Rob brought up, and in fact, I just learned from Rob, we did not qualify, or we didn't get it either. But one of those things is that you had to be around for at least 5 years, which I thought was really interesting in a lot of industries that haven't really even been around that long. I mean, you look at Part 107, right? Technically, the industry has only been technically available, you know, since 2016. Kenji, you keep looking at me like I am on some good stuff over here.
Yeah, I didn't hear about the 5-year rule. And Vic's shaking his head no. So,
Rob very specifically said that under certain programs, and I don't know which program it was. I'm not the finance guy. Okay, I know that under the program that DroneU qualified for, that part of the qualifications were being around for that long. I don't know which program it is. Again, I'm not the bean counter. That's his specialty, not mine. That being said, that brings us to a really good point, right? There's no more money in these programs, not really helping drone pilots right now. What is it? Congress is out until May 7th. I don't know if drone pilots should really be focusing on, you know, trying to get access to that money. I mean, obviously we should try to reach out to our congressmen and women, I just don't know if they should be counting on it, right? I don't know if they should be focusing on that. And you know what? Peter brings up a really good point, and I want to have him chime in really quick, which is what happens if the coronavirus comes back in September?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'm leaving that in the show for sure.
Oh, you got to rub one into me, huh? All right. So, look, a few of our clients are expressing this concern, and they're already preparing for September, October for maybe another wave. The CDC this week also acknowledged this is a real thing. Cities are talking about social distancing all the way until 2021. A lot of these listeners out here do real estate, do reality shows, do the B-rolls for most TV shows. Filming isn't going on here in New York City right now. Netflix, I know, has not hired a lot of people this past month in New York. And, you know, where are the small businesses going to be?
Yeah, no, I hear you, Peter. I think you bring up a good point. But that's going to bring us to our last question of the day, which is a very important question. And I'm going to go to Josh here because I think Josh is going to give it to us raw, real, and dirty. With the launch of the DJI Mavic 2 Air, do you see this drone making waves in the industry? Do you see people buying it? Do you think that from commercial pilots and hobbyist pilots, does it take off?
I think it's definitely a weird time to do this, and we'll see how it goes. But I do think that a lot of hobbyists might go to it. And there's a lot of hobbyists like using the Mavic Air. I don't think that there's enough out there to really do anything significant. But
is it commercially viable in your eyes?
Definitely not commercially viable because they're still sticking with the small sensor, and that's the issue. But we'll see how it updates on all the other issues. And so let's see how
that
goes.
Are you trying to say that this might be the perfect drone-based drone?
You never know. I mean, if all you need is a few pictures, then might as well just take the little squirt up.
Tell us how you really feel. All right, Peter. At a price point, some are saying is going to be $800 or $900. Others are saying $500 or $600. Do people buy the drone, hobbyist and commercial? Break it down for me.
As a hobbyist, of course. Come on. Look, you.
But do people really have the money?
Look, everyone just got $1,200 checks. Okay. At the end of the day, 1/3 of people didn't pay their rent. I'm going to speak from experience from working at DJI. It will sell. I don't think they're going to sell millions like they're planning on. I don't think they're going to break 100,000 at this time. You know, you can't go to the park in New York City. Where are you going to go fly? In your backyard?
No, I mean, I think you bring up a really good point, which, you know, Kenji's sitting here shaking his head as you're speaking. And I'm just wondering, Kenji, do you, you know, with everything you just said about the PPE, the PPP, I feel like I'm saying something dirty. And all these other programs and people running out of money, do you think people can really afford to go out and buy a drone?
In my industry, probably not. We have bigger priorities, which, I mean, it's a great tool. I mean, I could see being able to use it in certain situations where we might not be using some of our bigger rigs, but right now, would I buy it? No.
Yeah, I'm actually even considering buying it for DroneU to have a class on it, because if a lot of people don't have it, it's really not worth it for us, right? We want to provide real practical value. And if people are not using these drones for practical services, I'm not really sure how much that we can help them. But Vic, what do you think? I mean, do you think a lot of people are going to be picking up this drone?
I think the timing sucks for DJI and for Autel and for Skydio and everybody. I'm not sure how many people are going to buy it. I haven't had a lot of contact with all that many pilots lately because of everybody isolating. but I just don't see anybody really wanting to go out and spending the money right now on a, I'm going to say rumor drone, although I think it's pretty safe bet that, you know, it's beyond the rumor stage. And unless it's just that fantastic upgrade for something, I don't see it. The you know, supposedly what a 40 megapixel, whatever it is, sensor. I just don't see it. Maybe some hobbyists, maybe some commercial folks, maybe somebody just getting in. But, you know, I think DJI had to do it, though. How long is a new drone in the pipeline? You know, what are they going to do, hold off a little bit longer and lose even more sales? So I think the timing sucks for them, but it was necessary to drop it.
Yeah, I think timing definitely sucks. You bring up a good point that the timing sucks kind of for everybody right now. But it makes me wonder, I'm going to bring all of you into one feed at one time. I would like you to raise your hand if, as a hobbyist, you're going to buy the drone. 3, 2, 1, go. Wow. 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 I'm just going to unmute everybody because we're all laughing. Okay. As wow. Commercial pilots, please raise your hand or wing if you're going to buy the drone as a commercial pilot.
I'd have to see it.
See, everyone's like,
see it. You've seen it. It's on a particular website.
I know. I'd have to see files from it. Let me put it that way. I want to see raw files.
With the same type of sensor, Vic, as a 1/2, I haven't looked at the specs on the sensor, and our great source, unfortunately, can't speak up, which brings us to a great question. If they're using a 1/2 sensor, no matter how many megapixels it is, is it really going to be usable?
No, it's going to be a horrid low light drone.
Yeah.
Take my class and find out why.
I love that, Vic. Throws it in there. Shameless plug. All right, well, Vic, I really
just want to see it go through the obstacle course. That's all I'm thinking about.
What, the Mavic Air 2?
Yes.
You don't think it'll make it?
Oh, of course it will, but it's going to be fun to see it.
Yeah, for sure. For sure, for sure.
The other day, I spoke to somebody who works in broadcasting in Canada, and they actually have more than a dozen DJI Mavic Minis that they use, because all they need is 1080p. That's all they need for broadcasting. So they actually use a lot of those small drones, especially in Canada. The Mavic Mini, you can pretty much fly it anywhere. So for them, it's one of their most used drones. So I think it really depends who you're talking to and what the purpose is that you need the drone for, whether any drone would be interesting.
Yeah, this brings me back to Kenji, I mean, the pigeon. It makes me really wonder, we appreciate that you appreciate here, Kenji, on the National Pigeon Day. But Kenji, if these production studios are saying, you know what, we just don't want to deal with the red tape, buy the Mavic Mini and we can do whatever we want. But doesn't that also completely kill the creativity of being a cinematographer? I mean, when we say things like this, how does that make you feel?
From my perspective, at least, the end point, I'm thinking in the future with companies like Skydio and some what DJI has come out with some of the advanced algorithms, I'm already planning that my job is going to be obsolete eventually, just because the technology is going to get to the point where our job will be to actually design the flight path and just sort of press that button. It goes off, does what it does, captures what needs to be taken, and it's repeatable. That's the beauty of it too. So I am not at all offended, but with the current technology, it can't achieve some of the shots that we can with the skills that a lot of our pilots and camera operators have. I mean, it can do some pretty basic stuff, but it can't do the advanced close-in, high-speed stuff that we specialize in. But eventually this technology will get there, but as of now, no. So I'm not too concerned in the near future, but thinking ahead, yeah.
Well, I appreciate everything that you've said here, Kenji, and I appreciate your perspective, which kind of brings us to the end of this discussion. I mean, the state of the industry, it sounds like, long and the short of it is up in the air. Some people, maybe construction, maybe real estate, maybe infrastructure, they're doing great. Maybe they're getting more jobs. But for those of us in cinematography and film, like Kenji and I, well, and Peter, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you out there, Peter, and Peter as well, then, you know, we're losing jobs. And Kenji, I don't know about you, but we're on a 9-week hold right now as of April 1st. So, you know, that's a significant amount of time. And with the other things that we've been hearing here, it seems like, you know, it's really up in the air. Will people buy these new drones? How much will it really matter? Will the lack of sales affect the industry as a whole? There's just a whole lot that we really don't know. And frankly, I think that having all of you here provides really a great perspective and greatly appreciate it. Kenji, it seems like you've got something here on your mind.
Yeah, just want to mention that one thing to keep an eye out on, like you said, construction, like folks have said, construction, sort of infrastructure, those jobs are still staying around. And especially if Congress passes an infrastructure bill, you're going to see a lot more construction, and that's going to create a lot of jobs. So you and I might need to pivot and do some of that. But just keep that in mind. Keep an eye on what's happening in Congress, because that has a direct impact on what we're doing.
So maybe the message here is, hey, everyone, the fight against remote ID ain't just over yet. Put those britches back on. You wouldn't say it like that, Kenji?
Nah.
Oh, man. Well, thank you again for joining us, Kenji. Really do appreciate your time today.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Well, that brings us to the end of the show, which really, as I've said here, ladies and gentlemen, I think we really have gotten some great info on the state of the industry, the verticals that are working, the verticals that aren't working, whether people are going to be buying these new drones, Haya. But just to wrap it all up, I mean, what did you get out of this panel? What are you thinking?
Oh, I think it's great to hear all these different perspectives. I mean, you have all these people on the panel here that have very different backgrounds. So it's very interesting to hear from everybody what they see as the challenges are and the obstacles perhaps that we have in the near future in front of us. Overall, I would say I just hope that the FAA is going to use this crisis situation to get some of those drone companies to the foreground, show how drones can be beneficial to the society. I'm thinking about not just using drones to make those announcements for social distancing, but also to disinfect large public areas. I know that they've been using drones at the Javits Center in New York, even to measure people's temperature. So there's a lot of ways that we can use drones. And I think this is a great opportunity to show how we can use drones for the greater good for all of us. So I hope the FAA is not going to let this opportunity pass.
Yeah, I think you bring up a lot of good points, and I hope they really take the time and use it wisely as well, although the internet logs are showcasing otherwise, or at least the ones that I can see. Now, again, I think it's important, everyone, you have got to continue staying educated. You've got to continue fighting. You've got to stay on top of what's going on, but you also have to stay on top of your business, and you've got to pivot, and you've got to think about what services you can offer during these tough times. And I know that, Josh, as a drone mapper, has a lot of opportunity, although it may not be that exciting as he has yawned through most of the show. But I'm excited for him and for a lot of other mappers who have a great opportunity, you know, with creating interior and exterior models. Sorry, this has been a lot of fun for me, ladies and gentlemen. In fact, we'll just go back to the gallery view. Haya, thank you again for joining me. If we want to do the Brady Bunch, then does that mean that I go like this to Josh? I mean, so yeah. Anyway, I really appreciate having all of you here. Joshua Baker from Houston, Texas. Vic Moss, Denver, Colorado. Peter Kalapadis from New York City. Haya Costello, the Flying Dutchman. You never know where he is. And Kenji, all the way from Oregon. Thank you, friends.
All right. Have a good time, everybody.
Safe. You're welcome.
Safe.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Nice
to
see you, everybody.
Bye.
It was a lot of fun seeing everyone. And that is going to do it for us today, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you again for joining us for another show. If you found the show useful, please leave us a review on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you download the show. Don't forget to friend us on Facebook and give us a nice little like on Instagram. We really appreciate having you all here today. Thank you again for joining us. My name is Paul, and this is another episode of Ask Drone You.
We believe that videos, images, words, and sounds have the absolute power to inform, inspire, and entertain. We reject indecision, confusion, and vanity, for they work against the community. We are united under the virtues of safety and knowledge. We are a training community of learners and teachers who encourage and energize each other to achieve greatness. We are pilots, videographers, photographers, freelancers, business owners, enthusiasts, experts, and apprentices. We are creators. We are the Drone U.